What's up, Vincent?
The largest zombie takeout I have ever encountered, Mr. Pfizer. What's up? Welcome to episode 90 of Zombie Takeout.
Zombie Takeout.
The B-Movie and Cult Movie Podcast. I'm Uncle John.
And I'm Scotto.
And before we get to this week's movie, we've just got a bit of front matter. First off, we'd like to thank Kristen over at geekquest.org for the very kind review she wrote for us.
That was, I mean, they like us.
Yeah.
They really like us. I know, I'm sorry, I couldn't resist.
We also have a bit of listener submitted, both from John Phillips via the Facebook page. In reference to episode 88, The Howling, he said, Battleship trailer, ... horrible.
Oh, yeah.
And also, he said, wasn't Fire and Ice an early 80s movie? And I did some checking. It was an 80s animated movie. Yes, the Robert Rodriguez, you know, cheesy as hell fantasy thing, it started life, same story, same idea as an 80s animated. He-Man had better animation.
Oof.
I skimmed it. Yeah, He-Man looked better.
Oh, wow.
In terms of the animation, I only skimmed the movie, so I don't know how, but the acting seemed, but it's on the list. We'll be getting to it. In reference to last week's episode, The Cat from Outer Space, he said, you know why this movie's great? There are three actors that were in MASH. The Judge had a small recurring role in the first two or three seasons. Most notably when Hawkeye was named head surgeon and Frank and Hotlips contacted the general to inspect. And I checked IMDb, Sorrel Book, it was in the first season. It was in episodes 3 and 4, playing General Wilson Spaulding Barker.
I was almost going to comment that, you know, bullshit, Boss Hogg on MASH, really?
I hadn't remembered it. I read John's comment, and I vaguely remembered him on MASH. I checked, and lo and behold, first season.
Nice.
We also have a bit of news.
Okay.
This comes via Cinema Blend. Bruce Campbell confirms he will have a role in Sam Raimi's Oz the Great and Powerful. Campbell has announced via his Twitter account that he will have a role in Oz the Great and Powerful. If you're wondering what part he might play, however, prepare to be left in a fog of mystery, as even Campbell doesn't know. He said, I am in Oz. Sam refuses to tell me what character I will portray, just that the role is pivotal.
Why couldn't it be the prison Oz?
No, I don't know if we'd want to see... Well, but I wouldn't want to see that, period. I've seen enough of that. It's a prequel of sorts to the 1939 Technicolor classic. The film stars James Franco as Oscar Diggs, a magician con artist who finds himself in the land of Oz, convincing everyone that he's a great wizard. And he has everyone entranced except for the three witches, who believe that he's an imposter. There'll be a link to that story in the show notes, of course. The three witches are going to be played by Mila Kunis, Rachel Weisz, and Michelle Williams. James Franco and Mila Kunis.
Well, am I the only person on this planet that's absolutely sick of The Wizard of Oz?
I haven't really heard. I'm not a fan. I could care less if I ever watch it again. I'm not that I'm only interested in this because it's Raimi, but I'm not actively sick of it. Like say Stairway to Heaven, I'm actively sick of. But
oh my god, though. I mean,
I haven't seen it in decades, so I'm not actively sick of it.
I really didn't think the story was all that compelling to spin not one, but two prequels?
Yeah.
I mean, what's next? A prequel to One Life to Live or something? Some crap-ass soap opera? Really? We don't need this.
No.
I know it's the great Sam Raimi and everything.
Yeah.
But I think his talents are wasted.
Yes, especially when he should be making the Warcraft movie.
Well, yeah.
And we really don't need Mila Kunis in another movie. Franco has potential. As I've said before, he was great in 127 Hours. I've heard wonderful things about Rise. as you know, we'll be getting to that soon. So he might get a pass in the near future. It might be Brad Pitt all over again. But Mila Kunis, we really have seen enough of. More news.
Yes.
Alan Tudyk will be playing Stephen Douglas in Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. This from IO9.
What?
Alan Tudyk, best known as Wash from Firefly. You've never seen that.
No.
But he was also in A Knight's Tale, which I think you've seen.
So is he like a short guy? Because I believe Stephen Douglas was a...
Well, he was... you've seen A Knight's Tale?
Yes.
The two sidekicks. Mark Addy was the other one. Alan Tudyk was the thinner, red-haired one.
Okay.
And then Chaucer. He was that. That's Alan Tudyk.
All right.
He said, "I'm Abe Lincoln's political foil. Historically, Stephen Douglas was initially engaged to Mary Todd, who became his wife. They were fellow senators, and they battled it out for presidency. Stephen Douglas was a flip-flopper. He started his political career being opposed to slavery, then he married a plantation owner, or someone with a plantation, and saw all the money coming in. It was then politically expedient for him to be pro-slavery."
And Lincoln kind of trapped him in the senatorial debate, knowing that they were going to face each other in a presidential election not that far down the road, so...
Now,
he lost the senatorial debate to beat him in the presidential one.
Stephen wanders into the movie, he continued, to represent the other side. Also, historically, Stephen worked closely with the vampires to realize his political ambitions. He said, working with Rufus Sewell, the big baddie, was great, who he also worked with in A Knight's Tale, and Ben Walker, who plays Abe. So, yeah, this is shaping up to be an amazing movie. And from the good to the utterly bad.
All right.
I found this one out initially via Kristen at GeekQuest. You can find her on Twitter at geek_quest. She mentioned that, well, backtrack a little bit. Last week you were joking about a Candyland movie.
Yes.
Well, Kristen mentioned something about a Candyland movie on Twitter. I, of course, had to go looking, and I found an article on Salon that said, according to the film's writer, Kung Fu Panda co-scribe Glenn Berger. I'll let that sit for a second. Candyland is aiming for a much darker vision. Quote unquote, "We envision it as a Lord of the Rings, but set in a world of candy. We don't see it as a movie based on a board game, although it has characters from that world and takes the idea of people finding themselves in a world that happens to be made entirely of candy where there are huge battles going on."
Oh.
He also said, "We're going for real comedy, real action, and real emotions at stake." Is it just me, or does this sound like a Mad TV sketch?
Yes.
And I don't mean early Orlando Jones era Mad. I mean, like, the last couple of years when they were barely hanging on.
That's stunning. It really is. I mean, you make jokes about how bad they're churning movies out, but... Wow.
Kristen said that she did a search after while listening to the show to make sure we were joking. We were joking at the time.
Yes.
She did the search to see and found that out.
Whew.
Yeah. So, on to better things, this week's movie.
Well.
Well, we'll see about that. Which, of course, brings us to the impromptu plot summary. Brought to you by Gravity. It's not just a good idea, it's the law.
All right here. So, we have, we pretty much have, an extended episode of Star Trek here.
Yeah.
We've got a crew who, they are, I believe they're exploring the area of the black hole, are they not?
Mm-hmm.
And yet they, for some reason, don't have a record of a ship that was doing the same mission they were, but was called back but never responded. Yet they are surprised to see it. So they find this abandoned ship. Well, it looks abandoned because the lights aren't on and everything. Because the inhabitants are hiding.
Until they see some shadows.
Right. Then they see some shadows. They board the ship to find the mad scientist is the sole survivor. So they think, at least. But there's something odd about the robots. They have a limp. One of them does, at least. Yeah. They have some human tendencies. When you find out, of course, and I guess spoiler alert, the robots are actually the survivors of the old crew. That they've, I guess, been brainwashed for some reason, and they
Or
are
lobotomized or something.
yes, lobotomized and put into robot bodies. Stop me when any of this starts making sense to you.
Basically, Dr. Moreau in space.
Well, yeah, if he could do all of this, why didn't he just, make robots to perform these tasks?
Or just watch bad movies with him.
Right, or just watch bad movies with them. Would have been a much better movie if that's what they were doing out there.
That movie exists.
Right. So, let's see, the crew that, they don't trust him, a lot of them, except for, of course, Norman Bates, who thinks he's an okay guy. And of course he would. He's not dressed up like his mother, slashing people or anything.
And he Anthony Perkins' character is also a scientist, so.
Yes. And of course he gets the glint in his eye too, to, boldly go where no one has gone before and go into the black hole. How would they call it? A never-ending tunnel? I don't know. There are a lot of lines that I had to giggle.
Yeah. You gotta wonder if they realized it was such an innuendo when they made the movie.
I don't know. But anyway, let's see. There isn't much left of this impromptu plot
Oh.
summary. We've almost covered it all. When they find out the truth, they try to escape, and he has already set in motion to run through the black hole, and I guess they have to make the decision whether they can go through it themselves or try to stop him. But whatever it is, hilarity ensues.
And it turns into 2001 for a minute.
It was worse than 2001 at the end. I mean, I don't know. 2001 ended with one shot where you're like, "Huh? Where as this?" I mean, there was a suggestion of a rebirth in the end of
Right,
2001,
right.
I guess you could say.
Just to explain, we've had several debates about 2001. I love it, you hate it.
Yeah, I'd almost be willing to give that another go just to see. Because it's been a long time since I've watched it, to see if it makes any more sense to me than the last time, which was
Well,
a good.
it's not a movie you want to look to for sense.
It's a good 20 years ago now, almost, or coming up on it since the last time I've seen it. So we'll see about that.
Anyway, so they try to escape, they go through the black hole, weird stuff happens.
Yeah,
Hilarity
very,
ensues.
very nonsensical, weird stuff.
Yes.
I guess we shouldn't talk about the ending right away. We'll get
But
back
we'll
to
get
that.
into that, yeah.
Yeah.
Hilarity ensues.
Yes, hilarity. Hilarity definitely ensues.
Now, did your copy have about 30 seconds of black screen with music at the beginning? Before
No.
the animated wormhole?
No, it didn't.
That's odd, because I was getting all the audio. Watched it on Amazon. I was getting all the audio. It was just music. But black screen, and I thought the copy was broken until I advanced a bit. And then I get to the credits with the 3D wormhole, which I'm convinced were a precursor to Tron.
Yeah, but you think Disney likes the grid effect?
I should clarify. It's a grid 3D rendering of a black hole.
Right. That, I guess it was in part of them trying to make the effect, and they decided that looks so cool, we'll put it in the credits.
Well, in their defense, it was 79.
Yeah.
It's pretty revolutionary at the time. In fact, it was the longest computer graphic shot that ever appeared in a film.
The opening credits.
Yeah. With the grid wormhole thing.
Oh.
The film also has the first digitally recorded soundtrack.
Really?
Now, I'm going to say, and it's been a while since we've disagreed, but this is going to be the first in a while. Least significantly disagreed. I actually liked the movie.
Wow.
The acting was horrible, for the most part. I'll give it that. I'll say that.
It wasn't even the acting as much that I'm down on it for. 'Cause I think the acting, I mean, it had its glimmers of good and bad. It was kind of a mixed bag, the
Roddy
acting.
McDowall, Slim Pickens, and at times Maximilian Schell were the only bright spots to me.
I thought we were talking about a cat from outer space.
Again, well, Slimpick—it's kind of a hybrid of the last couple, the Howling and Cat, because you got Roddy McDowall from Cat from Outer Space, Slim Pickens from the Howling.
Well, here, you know what's funny? Ken Berry's performance in Cat from Outer Space was much better than what I was expecting. Anthony Perkins' performance in this
Oh yeah.
was probably about the same level as Ken Berry's from Cat from Outer Space.
No, I think it was worse.
They're not bad performances, but you expect a lot better out
From Anthony
of Anthony
Perkins, yeah.
Perkins.
He was completely phoning this one in.
Yeah, he started out okay, and then somewhere in the script, maybe he read the full thing finally and just realized, oh my God, this is shit.
I don't know if I got used to it or what, but it started bad for me, and it seemed to get tolerable. Again, maybe I just got used to it.
Now, I was kind of in the middle on it, and it wasn't until somewhere towards the end where it was just, oh my God, what are they doing?
Also notable in the acting department, Ernest Borgnine. Now, for the first half of the movie, he was trying to act too hard, I think.
Oh yeah, he was doing his usual Ernest
Well,
Borgnine.
no,
He
in the second half, he was the same Ernest Borgnine you see in every role, and
Right.
love it or hate it. But for the first half, he was enunciating oddly and really overacting. Somewhere in the middle, he just turned back into Ernest Borgnine.
Now, who I think was terrible in this, and who seems to get a lot of love out of this whole thing, is Maximilian Schell.
I wouldn't say terrible. He was spotty to me.
He wasn't even a good James Bond villain. He was like something out of the Pink Panther movies, I thought.
Yeah. There were points that were good, and I don't mean great, I mean passable. And then there were points that were just way too arch and, trying to be the villain.
And what accent was that? Holy shit! I mean, he started out, I'm thinking it was German, and then it went into French, and then somewhere it went to Spanish. Was he just trying to purposely make it a generic European
That's
accent?
exactly what I think he was doing. I was just gonna say that.
What the fuck?
Yeah, he was just going for generic European, I think.
Yeah.
It just didn't quite work.
An interesting side note, the young guy, Pizer or
Yeah.
whatever. He is the brother of Sam Bottoms. His name is Joseph Bottoms. He's the brother of Sam Bottoms,
Okay.
Lance from Apocalypse Now.
Oh, okay. I know Joseph Bottoms. I'm aware of him. I've seen him in a, I think I've seen him in a few things. I know the name. At least Sam Bottoms, I'm not that familiar with.
It's like that. The whole movie was bugging me. Like he looked so familiar. Like
Yeah.
where is he from?
Now we talked about this before we watched the movie last week. We both hated this as a kid, when we were kids.
Yes.
And I realized the reason I hated it, I went in expecting Star Wars. And the pacing in this movie is very slow.
Yeah. I don't even
At
know if
least at the
that was
beginning.
it.
I was expecting, explosions and cool aliens and Star Wars. And Lucas made a brilliant decision, and we may or may not get this into this at a later date, more so, but there was a scene at the beginning of Star Wars with Luke and Biggs at Tosche Station that he decided to cut to start right with the assault on Tantive IV.
Right.
Brilliant idea, because it just brings you in aggressively.
Of course.
With that in my brain, seeing this a couple of years later, that beginning was just too deathly slow, and I hated it for that alone. I don't even know if I've seen it all the way through before watching it for this episode. But you were saying that wasn't it for you?
Yeah, the problem with this, and I'll say this is from, I don't know, maybe it just lacked action as a kid, and that's
Yeah.
what I found fault with it. But even now, it not only lacks action, it lacks real conflict that you can even wrap your head around. I mean, considering most of the destruction occurs not from what anybody did, but just from random meteors that come in,
Yeah.
it's just totally absurd. They don't do anything in this movie.
But they get to the ship, they realize he's insane, they try to escape, and his robots come after them, and then the meteor shower happens. And the
Right.
meteor shower, I think, was, speaking of the meteor shower, probably the worst effect in the movie.
Holy cow, it was. It, none of it made any sense. I was like in like the middle around, you know, on this movie. I was on the fence. And then when that meteor shower started, wow, did it start to plummet for me.
The effect of the meteor shower was hideous. And which is surprising because they thankfully kept the effects to a minimum also with this one. Disney kind of knew what they were doing in that sense.
They needed to keep them even more to a minimum, honestly. I mean,
well, the meteor shower was horrible, but I can't think of any other effects that really stuck out as being bad.
The difference between this and Star Wars is that Star Wars, you could believe you were seeing a space scene behind them, right? You know, they look like stars. This looks like they just had a star painting, you know, dropped
Right.
somewhere in the background. And you could kind of tell. And you could see strings.
Yeah.
In fact, that'd be an awesome drinking game for this movie. Anytime you see strings, you chug out of your official zombie takeout shot glass.
Bit of trivia. Although Star Wars had popularized the use of computer motion control miniature effects, the Black Hole was shot using a blend of traditional camera techniques and newly developed computer-controlled camera technology. Disney wanted to rent equipment from ILM, but the price was too high and the timing didn't work out. So they had to the engineering department had to build their own, resulting in the development of Disney's ACES, and as well as the matte scan system, which also allowed for the camera to move over a matte painting.
And think of how much better. I mean,
if they had been willing to pay for ILM, it would have been better, yes.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, it wasn't the people of ILM, it was just their gear, so
yeah.
I don't know if it would have been as great as we're thinking.
Yeah, because nothing can really save this script.
This I didn't
script
mind the script.
Is hopeless. There's no, like I said, there's no, the big climactic fight scene between Vincent and Maximilian, where, you know, he just goes between his arms and like a T-Rex he can.
I didn't see that as a big climactic fight scene. I saw that as like what R2-D2 does in the Star Wars movies, where he'll just knock out somebody real fast and they can keep going.
Well, first he gets between his arms, and Maximilian does the T-Rex thing where he can't,
right,
bend his arms to reach him. And then he switches gears, gets out this electric thing, and starts electrocuting him or whatever, shorting him.
Yep.
And this armor that can withstand lasers suddenly just gets drilled through like it's a tin can. That's, you know why I say it's the big climatic fight scene? Because it's the only fight scene in the movie!
Well, there were gun battles.
Oh, you can't count those.
And also, during those gunfight battles, and whether or not, you know, whether or not they were any good, debatable, but there was a bit of music that was incredibly familiar.
The score was also pretty awful in this too. Well, what was that from?
I am not sure either.
It was very Flash Gordon, Star Wars-esque.
But that specific piece I've heard in something, I'm inclined to say the end of Spaceballs. Maybe they borrowed it for that.
And a lot of the set did, and that those scenes resemble the Death Star.
Oh, yeah, they were clearly going for the Death Star. I mean, let's no illusions. This was trying to cash in on Star Wars completely.
The funniest Star Wars nod, and I won't call this a ripoff because I think this was just a nod, was when, if you look closely, when they're getting to the docking elevator of the ship and they show it on the radar, it's the Millennium Falcon.
I did not notice that.
You'll have to look. When they show the screen, you see the two, like, you know, prongs kind of sticking out and it goes down around. The actual platform itself, when they show it, isn't. But when they showed, like, the radar, you know, computer rendering of it on the screen, it's the Millennium Falcon.
Wow.
So that gave me a good chuckle. I thought I was in for something, you know, much better.
To me, I think, again, like Cat from Outer Space, it was at least more, it went places, it got a little darker than one would expect from a family movie.
This wasn't a family movie, though. That's the
it
thing.
It wasn't? It's Disney. I went in thinking family movie.
I wouldn't, I mean,
because it was the Disney label.
It was, true. But I think this was them trying to branch beyond the family movie.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was notable for being the first Disney film to not have a universal rating due to mild language
right.
and scenes of a human death. It also led to the Touchstone and Hollywood Pictures so that they could do movies that were more adult.
Okay. Yeah, because they did. They began to do... Although I thought with Tron, they ended a lot of their main, you know, titles for a while.
Oh, yeah. Their live-action movies didn't do too well.
Well, because they had the reputation for, you know, subpar work. Oh, man. They might as well have just put Herbie in space.
I don't know. I found myself really getting pulled into this one. The ending was surprisingly dark. Again, thinking it was coming into it as a family movie.
Yeah.
And yeah, there were bad parts. Charlie falling toward the black hole was laughable. Maximilian, when he somehow moves through the void without an EV suit and somehow climbs into Maximilian.
Well, right.
That was laughably bad. I will give you that. But
what on earth? What? How are they just walking around in space without oxygen?
Yeah.
My God!
But the science wasn't all bad. They did call a black hole by its correct name, an Einstein-Rosen bridge. That I appreciated.
Okay. But still, they're just walking around in space like it was nothing.
Yeah. Well, were there any points where they were, aside from those two moments, which were laughable, were there other points where they were exposed to the vacuum?
I think a lot of the destruction of the ship, there were a lot of scenes where things just came open.
Were opened up and they were in there, yeah, and they ran.
Yeah, and they're just like, oh, it's a windy day, you know?
Well, although that I thought I liked, there was a scene where they're fighting the robots in the garden, the ship's botanical garden. And the roof crashes in from a meteor. It was a nice change of pace in the terrain, in the
right.
look of the film. Because all of this stuff gets whited out, and it, basically everything freezes, which was, visually, it was a nice change.
But we have to discuss the shooting scenes.
Okay.
All of them. These were even worse than Stormtroopers.
Yeah, because they were shooting at the heroes, and the heroes aren't allowed to get hurt.
But... In Star Wars, everybody criticizes Star Wars Stormtroopers because they at least those are from a distance.
Yeah.
You had Vincent flying point blank at them at the speed of, say, a weighted down butterfly, perhaps. And they still miss with, like, quadruple lasers.
And
if you look at this film, they only hit maybe two things. Throughout the entire film.
Right.
That's a horrible average.
And again, it was 79. Consider every TV thug shooting at the good guy in every 80s TV show or movie that was family oriented. They never hit anything.
Well, right. And you know, you can understand that when they're at a distance and whatnot.
Yeah.
But when Vincent flew in their faces and missed, I was just, it just really disgusted me. How about their walks, too? I mean, was I the only one? Which one do you think would be a better, you know, song for them to, when the Red Guys first came out? Either the March of the Wooden Soldiers or Thriller.
They were a little zombie-like, but that was
a
bit of foreshadowing.
They're robots, not zombies. Those were robots.
Okay, yeah, you're right. Just, yeah, they weren't. There was only the crewmen were the lobotomized crews.
And thankfully, after that, they went on to just become robots. So there was a lack of consistency with the direction throughout, I thought. He, like, really didn't know what he was doing with this.
Okay, so I guess we should talk about the ending.
One last thing, speaking of computers. ESP with a fucking computer?
Okay, yes, thank you. That was in my notes. I wasn't sure if I wanted to get into it.
Did she talk with her toaster as well?
Yeah, the token female in the crew apparently was psychic, and she communicated with Vincent via ESP with a robot. Yeah.
And do we have this to blame for Counselor Troi on Star Trek The Next Generation? Because, goddamn, it's another reason to hate this movie.
They didn't overuse it. It was only referenced a couple of times, but it was horribly cheesy, yeah.
It
The fact that she could talk to a robot.
It was a pretty big plot, you know, device towards the end, though.
To keep track of where Vincent was, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, on to the ending?
Ah, yes. The ending.
Mm-hmm. Now, it's called the black hole, but really the black hole is just used to get them in and out of the story and to basically give it a ticking clock.
Yeah.
Aside from that, it's, as we've pointed out, Dr. Moreau. But the ending, when the ship blows up and Maximilian, or sorry, Reinhardt, Maximilian Schell's character, you know, somehow flies through the void, and the good guys go through the black hole. Now, going through the black hole part, obviously it's going to be a 2001 ripoff.
Yeah.
That didn't bug me, you know, kind of what I expected, a little tamer than what I expected, because it didn't get weird until the very end when they saw the row of glass doors and the angel right before they left the black hole.
Right, and just in case you missed the, you know, hell and Satan motifs throughout the entire movie.
That was the part that I didn't at all understand, but kind of liked. Okay, so Reinhardt gets to Maximilian, gets inside of his armor, somehow fits in there. And then next thing we see him on a planet with an army of robots.
Right.
As their leader. How?
Oh, you know, who knows? The ship was destroyed pretty much. And,
destroying all of the other robots, stranding him on... Okay, he gets into the armor, he falls to this planet, fine, somehow survives it. How did he build his army?
How did he do anything? How did he get inside the machine in space? How long do you think a human can last floating in space?
Seconds, if that.
Right. Enough time to climb into the robot, perhaps.
Well, I mentioned that was absurd. Same thing with Charlie when he was flying toward the black hole, yeah.
I mean, I can forgive Lucas for, you know, the little explosions, you know, and stuff, or fire on the shot ships.
Oh, yeah.
This is
fire
just
in space,
like,
is a convention.
Right. But this is just like, what? You know, they're not in like the desert or something. They're in space. But anyway, so throughout the whole movie, though, they're giving you this whole, you know, satanic kind of, uh-huh, you know, motif that,
well, he's the mad scientist. He's Moreau. He's evil incarnate.
The scene at dinner where he's in red and he's got like the, and when he sneaks up on them and you see the chandelier behind his head, and, you know, they're giving that grand camera angle. You know, they're beating you up that this is Satan, you know, that he sold his soul for this, or made some sort of, you know, Faustian agreement, if you will.
Right.
And just in case you missed all that, at the end, he's in hell, or a planet that resembles it, and he is Darth Vader, stuck and trapped in his suit, or Satan.
Yeah.
Meanwhile,
I liked the whole what the fuck of the ending. I liked that it made no sense.
But, I mean, it made sense, actually. It did make sense, I thought. But it's just so childlike, you know, because the good guys, meanwhile, who went through the same black hole, they're in heaven, and there's an angel flying, and they go through crystal doors.
I didn't even connect that.
So I was less like, oh my god.
Because everything else you're talking about, it's just portraying him as the evil incarnate. But I didn't get the direct heaven and hell thing till just now. Wow.
Right. And to top it all off, they were obviously, I thought, trying to leave room for a sequel.
Oh, of course, yeah.
And if there's anything a shitty movie could do worse, would be to leave room for a shitty sequel.
But they all do that. You know, look at the end of Species. That just screamed sequel.
True. True. So, yeah, I found that quite annoying. But the real thing, what doesn't make any sense about it, was that there was no free will involved on anybody's part, with the exception of, course, our mad scientists. Mm. And even in the end, he's trapped over Well, what kind of looked like one of the early models of a plasma screen television, which I kind of found impressive. Think about it. This is 78, 79. There's, for them to have a monitor that was just a flat board
True, true.
is something that, not many people would think of back then.
But then again, Star Trek, pretty much created the touchscreen in the mid-80s. There were no buttons on those consoles.
Well, they even say that they kind of created the iPod too, but that's different. That's a good, 8 years later. This is, 79, where we're still using punch cards.
True, true.
Or 78, I forget. 79, 78.
So, on to sequels and remakes.
On to sequels and remakes.
Now, in November 2009, it was reported that Disney has plans to remake the movie, with director Joseph Kosinski and producer Sean Bailey, both from Tron Legacy,
Right.
attached to the project. This has a lot of promise for me.
I think so too. I think this could definitely be remade, with a better script, obviously.
I didn't like Tron Legacy as much as you did, but I still liked it. And I think if they could do that with Tron, I would love to see what they did, what they could do with this.
I think they really could go places with that. I think this was just really trapped in Star Trek more than anything else. In fact, this was almost the Doomsday Machine episode, wasn't it?
Yeah, pretty much.
It was pretty close to it. So I could, yeah, it, the remake is slated to come out next year, although there's not much report about it. I think Hayden Panettiere's
Oh,
rumored to be involved.
well.
But other than that, I don't think there's much they have much on it.
And this was 2009, it was mentioned, so who knows if it's even going to happen at this point.
And they're talking about a direct reboot.
And it was, wait, 2009 was before Tron Legacy.
Yes, so they were do they the idea was to do Tron Legacy first,
Okay,
and
so
then they're going to redo this. So they,
those two had signed on for Tron Legacy, but at that point probably, and
I
then
believe so.
probably signed
So
on for both movies.
I believe it's going to happen because Tron Legacy
Hopefully.
made some cash,
Oh,
you know.
yeah. Okay, on to Brains.
On to Brains.
Now, like I said, I liked it. I really got pulled into it. And I, aside from the acting, enjoyed it. But some of the things you pointed out, specifically the religious iconography at the end, have talked me down a bit. I'm gonna go 3.
Yeah, I mean, I was like I said, I was like somewhere in the two and a half thing, and then that meteor shower hit, and really there was just a lack of anything happening in the end. I mean, there was no confrontation of any sort. Even their trip into the black hole was something that they didn't do willingly.
Right.
So we just went through like a Disney ride where we didn't have the choice between going anywhere. It just kind of took us through, much like it did everybody else in this. I did find some glimmers of good acting in here, like I said, and some decent effects here or there. It just wasn't consistent. So I'm not gonna go completely no brains.
Okay.
I was actually I'm actually settling on one brain, though.
Okay. So what have we learned?
That there is only one Star Wars.
And I learned that Slim Pickens needs to be in every movie. I know he died in 83, but they can, piece the footage together, CGI it, put him in every movie.
Only if he's riding an atomic bomb.
And on that note, until next week when we will be reviewing the final movie in our Disney trilogy, The Prince of Persia.
I learned Mariah Carey should be in
Oh, God.
could be a better actor than Anthony Perkins.
Go to zombietakeout.com, check out the album art, the episode description, links to find us on Facebook and Twitter, also links to subscribe via RSS and iTunes. Please leave us a rating and a review on iTunes, it will really help us out. You can also find the movie list to find out what we'll be doing. It's all set in stone up through episode 101 at this point.
Awesome.
Or you can also suggest a movie.
Yeah, we'd make some changes if you wanted
Yeah.
to really hear us do something else.
Or you could also find links to leave us an email at zombietakeout@gmail.com or find our voicemail number. That number is 414-368-ZTO1 or for the alphanumerically challenged 414-368-9861. Of course, always remember that you will always be calling from the middle of Milwaukee.
What's a country?
And on that bombshell, always remember and never forget, wherever you go in life, there you
There you are.
We have to go.
No, no, I can't make it. My hover stabilization's gone. My main circuit's blown. And both backups are failing.
You can make it.
It's no use, Vincent. My useful days are finished. But part of me goes with you. You'll never be obsolete. Carry on the tradition. We're the best.
What's up, Vincent?
Take it again, because I just clicked.
Okay.